PFT Media.
Napoleon Bonaparte, Alexander the Great, General George S. Patton, and many others do not compare to the Land Rover himself, who is the greatest general as far as territory. We'll find out here in Half True History. Welcome back to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, mix them with the facts of the day, and come up with a good story that you might like to enjoy there. I am your professor for the night, Dan P. And as always, manning the station is super producer Chris Crespo.
What is up, guys? How you doing?
And ever there, ever at my side, the Kublai Khan to my Marco Polo, Pedro Lima.
What up, yo?
Doing all right, everyone? We're surviving our plagues.
Hanging in there so far.
Yeah.
Pedro, how you doing?
I don't have a kitchen. I don't like broadcasting where I'm at. My family has the living room, so this is the only quiet place I can find. The pollen is fucking up my eyes.
At least you're not like sitting in the cab of your pickup truck. In a parking
lot. You know how it is to talk to grown men and I'm fucking doing a pose like I'm being painted like a French girl?
I can make that the cover art for the episode.
We're good.
Oh, wow. Double veto. Okay. All right. Fine.
That'll be for the promotional posters.
The rare double veto. Immediate double no.
Because we know. We know. So, has everybody got your two doses?
Yeah, I'm all vaxxed up.
I'm all good. How about you?
Yeah, I got on the 23rd.
Okay.
All right, cool. Drews the Cogburn had his scheduled for Friday, and his got canceled, and they didn't, like, reschedule him with anything else. So he just got bumped.
My gosh.
Up in New York, there, if you have J&J, they're swapping you out with another brand. But you don't lose your appointment. But Drew just got fucked on. And I bet you by this time next week, it's going to be back to use.
But he can go back to. I mean, he wants to do the one shot and be done.
He doesn't care. He was trying to get a one shot. Yeah.
Okay. Two's not bad.
You know what? Both my parents got it at the same time. My mom was hurting after the second shot. My dad totally fine. And he's the one with all the health issues, bad heart, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera.
This is starting to sound
sore. My arm was sore for 2 days.
Yeah, my arm was sore, but that's nothing.
This is starting to sound like an anti-female vaccine.
Oh, no, we're going to do that's bad.
Everyone's moms, everyone's like, the only people been hit.
Yeah, that's true. The women I know, the people I know that got hit the hardest have been women.
Uh-huh. Johnson & Johnson, all women. Do we know men that have suffered?
I know a few that have, like, you know, typical get their ass kicked, but not, like, blood clots.
I was about to say, like,
you know what I've been doing? What
Proud Boy company made this vaccine?
Yeah, Gavin McGinnis.
When people ask me, did you get the vaccine, any side effects? I make up side effects.
Like, I saw zebras in my dream last night. It was crazy.
I can't see out of my left eye, and sometimes I talk and things shake. Like Fight Club, you know how the scenes just like blur off?
Like the film is coming off of the projector? Yeah.
Like, oh, here comes a penis.
That's just blood pressure issues.
Yeah.
It's actually a good segue in what we're going to be talking about with mind tricks going on.
Mind tricks?
mind tricks and totally getting people to believe stuff that isn't real, because that's gonna be the success.
Finally, the Chris Angel episode I've been clamming about. Good. About time that guy gets his spotlight in history. Greatest magician of our times.
Most of the success of what many consider one of the greatest generals, if not the greatest general in history, is due to his ability to really play up that Sun Tzu proverb of making people believe you are far away when you are near and vice versa. So we are going to go back to Asia to discuss what many people believe is one of the greatest generals of all time. And that's, you know, that's more of, we're looking at win loss. We're looking at land conquest, everything like that. We're not saying like, okay, this guy's not winning Mr. Congeniality or anything in this tournament here.
It's just pure stats.
Pure stats. Right. So
analytics, baby, we're doing analytics.
Money ball for land conquering.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Moneyball, land conquering. So right off the bat, where do you think this guy's going to come from? Which army?
Yeah, Mongolia.
Right. It's a Mongol. It's Genghis Khan's top general, Subotai.
Oh, so it's not even Genghis Khan.
No. Genghis doesn't even go on that many campaigns compared to Subotai.
Well, he's the head guy. He's the boss. King Arthur doesn't go on all the missions. He sends Lancelot and all that.
Well, yeah, Subotai was known as his dog of war.
Ooh. Oh, dang, that's a good nickname.
Mm-hmm. It was just really, he had a lot of them. It was Subotai the Unrelenting, Subotai the Valiant, Subotai the Dog of War. Yeah.
Dog of War is the one.
Mm-hmm. So when bitches need to be conquered, Subotai was leading the army. And it start. You would have never expected. He comes from humble background. He's not even a Mongol, actually. He is from another tribe up there in the Mongol Plains. They are known as it's Urian
Canadian.
And they're a group of merchants and artisans. That's their whole thing. They were actually known as the Forest Mongols because they weren't riders, they weren't horseback men. They were just kind of civilized guys, and they surrendered to Genghis Khan, or wanted to join him as soon as they heard of him, and they basically offered their tribe as fix-it men.
We'll patch so he men whittles whatever. He's the whittle wood, and this guy ends up being the
head son of a blacksmith.
I was a born a poor blacksmith.
Yep. Son of a blacksmith. His father gives his older brother to Genghis Khan as a warrior. And then later on, he joins his brother's side. His first job is he is doorman of the Khan. And that means his job is to stand outside of Genghis Khan's tent and make sure that the flap stays closed so that the cool air does not go in and that the warmth of the Khan's words stay inside.
That's a real job.
Yeah.
Doorman of the Khan.
They got those in New York City.
The warmth words of the Khan. Yeah. So, yeah, his first job was basically to stand outside in the cold and keep the door closed so that nobody got chilly inside, who is important. That's how he starts out. He's about 14, 15 years old, this kid. And
he does a great job. Yeah. They nickname him the Heater.
He learns how to horseback ride. He learns how to fight from the Mongols in the camp. As time goes on, they take a liking to him, and he starts learning the Mongol ways and becomes more and more Mongol as time goes on. He's just been traveling with the Khan for many, many years. And eventually he is made into one of the Khan's elite bodyguards, which it's a group of 10,000 of the most loyal men that Genghis Khan has. Those are his elite bodyguards. And then he's promoted as one of the generals of the elite bodyguards.
Can they all be certified elite, though, if there's 10,000 of them?
Out of 100,000 army.
Oh, so that's top 1%? Was that top 10%?
I'm bad at math. So, yeah, he's like 10% of mine.
10%? Okay, I guess you can call that
Yeah, how the hell did they get, like, oh, this is the elite one?
It bases on their loyalty to the Khan. So he kind of, like, knows them all before they're let in. Or they're vouched by someone that he trusts very, very highly. His first job, his first task, is to take 100 of Genghis Khan's best warriors and to attack the Meerkat tribe, which had betrayed Genghis Khan and deserted him in the last battle. He tells them, I don't need the warriors. Goes there and tells, you know, he goes to the Meerkat thing with a whole, like, surrender flag and everything. He's like, look, man, I understand. Genghis Khan's a dick. I left him too. I know where his supplies are, though. Let's start really getting at him. And he earns the trust of these Meerkats. They make him one of their own. They make him one of the tribe. And he spends weeks with him, leading him on this route to Genghis Khan's secret hideout. And by this time, he has led the Meerkats so far away from their base of operations, and they don't even notice because he is hitting small little targets, that they don't notice that he's just drawn them in, surrounded by the Mongol army. So he, you know, he did what he said. He basically was like, I did it without any troops.
And then they just saw, like, look up at the cliffs and see the Mongols looking down at them, and then just, like, drop their weapons, like, whoa.
Pretty much. Where are we? Oh, we're here now. Okay.
Just walking to our own cells or jail cells.
Right. This and this tactic will serve him well a little bit later on. He really is good about pretending to retreat. That is, like, one of his number one strategies. And he plays on a lot of people's pride. The only way pretending to retreat works is if you know that your commander is a glory hog.
So meaning that the pretend to retreat, the guy's still going to be, no, we got to kill him. We got to kill him.
Yeah.
And that's how,
And that's the tactic he's going to use later on against the Russians. Because a lot of people are like, well, how did the Mongols even take Russia? Everyone said they, you know, you can't take Russia. You can't take Russia. Well, you can. You just got to take the Russians out of Russia.
The old rope-a-dope.
He leads the princes on a 9-day retreat goose chase.
Damn.
He takes them 9 days outside of Russia. And they really think, like, because he'll leave a few men here and there. They'll fight him. They'll get their confidence up. And he just keeps leading those breadcrumbs. People were ready to die for their Khan. And it becomes a total slaughter of the Russian princes.
Just walking. It's like, what is it? I think it's coyotes or wolves that do this. That they'll send a female out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll be in heat, and then a stray dog or a dog will go out and be, like, you know, chasing the female wolf, but she's just leading it to the pack so the pack can just, you know, have dinner time.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny because here the Russians are going to use the same tactic against Napoleon and Hitler. So, you know, it's like he basically was the father of Russian military defense. By beating the Russians with their own tactic, or what will become their own tactic. It's, yeah, he's the one who is responsible for Genghis Khan getting over the Great Wall in the Jin province. And how he does that is basically the same way that we do Operation D-Day, which is war, you know, give enough false information that the biggest army is coming miles north, so that they all put their guys there, and then the actual army hits south, which is exactly what we did in Normandy Beaches.
Damn, dude. Sabotage.
Yeah.
But the one that gets the glory is Genghis.
Mm-hmm. Genghis will get the glory as the great conqueror and everything.
Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
why is it that homeboy was just so overlooked?
He wasn't overlooked in Asia. And that's one of the reasons why we don't hear a lot about him, is because we're still just getting to a lot of translating Asian historical texts. Everything that we know about Subotai and the Mongols, for the most part, is a lot of secondhand accounts. because we still haven't gotten to a lot of those primary sources. So yeah, we still don't know a lot about Subotai because, and Genghis Khan gets all the credit because it's been Western historians for the most part writing about Genghis Khan. That's all Marco Polo talked about with Genghis Khan and Kublai. But now as we're digging up more and more and more, we're starting to see, you know, who the real star player was. Yeah.
It's a lot of history to get through too. You talk about Asian history.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at documents from so many Chinese kingdoms, so many Central Turkish kingdoms, the translation, the making sure you figure out who they're even talking about. And you got to go along the path. So it's, you know, he's very, very, it's only now, like the last few books that have been written about him. And there's some written really good papers, even in military academies. And I had to, you know, go do some research to look. We're only looking at the last 20 years that we're starting to see real papers and books written about Subotai. So
the movie's coming.
I hope so. He's a pretty cool dude. I mean, if people like that underdog story, he always was outnumbered. He never outnumbered his enemy, just like Genghis Khan wanted. And he always split his army off. He never had the main army of Subotai. He would always split it into four or five groups, so you never knew where the main attack was coming from. And it was he was a master of deception. He's able to get around the Jin, the troops of Jin, even though they're using their back to the Great Wall of China. He somehow finds a mountain pass around it and totally surprises them. So yeah, we're looking at a real tough dude, and many people think that he was probably going to be the man who broke Europe, or was going to be the man who broke Europe if Genghis Khan had continued into Europe.
But Genghis Khan put the stop.
He died.
He died, but why didn't Subotai continue?
That's because Subotai is not Great Khan.
He just wanted, got it.
Mm-hmm. He was just, you know, he's just the attack dog. And sure, he could have gone into Europe and wrecked Europe. But there was a whole discussion. All the Khans, all the kids and everything were like, we have to discuss and debate who's going to be the next great Khan. And so that ate up all the resources. And so the European campaign was never completed.
So he was standing around waiting for orders that never came.
Basically.
Just waiting.
He was just yeah, waiting. He kind of hung out. Eventually came back, but it was ready to go. The biggest block in his way was the Hungarian and Polish armies, and he was stomping them pretty bad. And then he finally gets to I believe it's a I forget the bridge's name, but anyway, they got to get across the bridge to get into the Hungarian rivers. I think it's the Kalka River, the Battle of Kalka River, I believe. And so again, this is still the same time before gunpowder is really used by the Europeans. The Jin were using a little bit of gunpowder against the Mongols, but nothing spectacular. So, you know, the whole, like, I guess one of the famous defenses in European, especially watching European military movies in the Middle Ages and stuff, is that hold the bridge, the only bridge across the river, et cetera, et cetera. You know, okay. And that's where you put all your men. And this is the, you know, if we this bridge falls, then so does the kingdom. I mean, it's such a trope now. And that's exactly what it was. It was this bridge that led into Hungary. And he... King Bela put Beli put all of his crossbowmen and best troops there and just packed the whole thing. So it was this unstoppable, unbreakable fortress of arrows and crossbowmen coming at you. It was, you know, and Subotai tried the first day, night attack, totally failed. And so, you know, they're really happy of this outcome. But again, Subotai split his army already. They think that what they're fighting is the main Subotai army. And while it is the main, it's not all. Subotai's already got things working out. As soon as he had the first defeat, the plan started going in motion.
That's okay. We can do the bridge. Let's go under the bridge like water.
We're not getting too great escape on this just yet.
Okay.
Yeah. What he's going to do is he is about to teach Napoleon everything Napoleon's going to learn about artillery. obviously 500 years before Napoleon is born. But here's the man who invents not only Napoleon's artillery style, but essentially the modern military style that we use today for warfare, which was made sure that they relied so much on that bridge. He fired all of his stone throwers, his catapults and everything, right onto the bridge, destroying the bridge and everyone on it. Just bombard the hell out of it. And while they're totally aghast and everything like that, and they've lost a huge portion of numbers, what had happened already was Genghis Khan's engineer unit, which him and Subotai had been building up because they knew engineers were just as important as soldiers, had already built a temporary bridge a few miles up north.
Oh, damn.
And they, so as soon as that bridge falls, here come the flanking Mongols.
Here comes the replacement bridge.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, to be a general on the other side, just seeing these guys just march with a brand new bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where'd they get the whole bridge from? They just brought it with them? That's crazy.
Right. Well, I mean, then that's what the engineers were for. Their job was to figure out how to quickly, you know, knock down whatever trees and supplies they had, set it up. And again, we're talking about miles north, so they don't even know what's going on. They don't even see that group coming in. And that's, again, Subotai's thing was just this master of deception. And constantly making sure people are on the run. All those great battles that we talk about Genghis Khan, when he is able to totally wipe out a much larger army. And when you look at the details, the reason is after those main armies of the commanders fall, they still have reserves, but those reserves have to be summoned. Those reserves have to be brought together. So if Genghis Khan ever fought all of these countries' actual reserves and army, he would have never made it. But Subotai basically has it so that he presses attacks on leaders so that once they lose their first assault, they are constantly on the run from his Mongol dogs of war, that they don't have time to regroup the reinforcements or the reserves. They don't have time to gather them and organize them. And then the Mongols can pick off the reserves one by one.
How much area did he cover?
Subotai is present for the attack of Jin, Hungary, Russia. You're looking at, then afterwards he heads back over to China and helps out Ogadai, the son of Genghis Khan. And so we're looking at, you know, tens of thousands of miles as far as
this man conquered. When he conquered China, that's a big chunk.
Yeah, he conquers northern China.
Yeah. That's a big chunk. And then I guess Russia, considering the big plot of land that Asia is.
Yeah.
He gets credit for that. But didn't Alexander the Great conquer that too?
He just didn't do China. He gets Persia.
He doesn't. Persia. Oh, okay.
Right.
So why does Alexander the Great get such like high praise for being a conqueror? He only did Persia.
First great conqueror, that's why.
That's why, okay.
First great.
He's blonde.
Yeah, and he's blonde, you know. But yeah, so he fought. He was in the army for 60 years, dies at age 73. Before Genghis Khan's son cancels the invasion, he had had his army in Europe ready to take out the Holy Roman Empire and right into Germany. Like, it was... He was just waiting, and the dog would have torn Europe apart. There was nothing that was going to stop him at that time. All that was left was Holy Romans, the French, and the English, and the Italians, and they had been fighting crusades for the past 200 years, so their supplies were extremely low as far as men and resources.
So that Genghis dying pretty much prevented this whole conquering thing, because it would have, I mean, think about it, if he would have conquered Europe, dude, how things would have changed.
Would have been all over, yeah. Like, the world would have been a totally different place if Genghis Khan had not died and Subotai was allowed to keep pushing westward. They say as far as area covers, and I was looking up the exact numbers here, but yeah, it's looking at, he conquered what is today 32 nations.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. What's the second place?
Second place? I don't know who got second place. I should have looked that up, actually.
Let me do some research here.
Yeah. A lot of historians are starting to agree. It's like, yeah, if Genghis Khan hadn't died, yeah, Subotai would have just ripped Europe apart.
Second best conqueror?
It'd make for a good Marvel what if comic. What if?
Yeah.
What if Genghis Khan lived?
See, they have Genghis Khan. When I look at who almost took over the world, Genghis Khan. Who conquered more, Alexander or Genghis? Genghis. Is Genghis Khan the greatest?
Because Subotai technically doing it all in Genghis's name. So he's getting the credit for it. It's like Phil Jackson gets the credit for all the rings.
Who's the second best?
Would it be a conquistador? They have conqueror in their job title.
Mm-hmm.
Or conquest, actually. Conquester.
Yeah, I mean, shit, who would it be?
Another fun fact about Subotai is that, you know, again, very smart, does his research on his opponents. And when he got to Europe, he realized something that was, like, very obvious. These guys were cuckoo for Christ. And that was going to be his main strategy when he goes over to take the territories of Georgia and Azerbaijan. He sends a parade of Mongol soldiers all holding wooden crosses to make them believe that they're this mercenary Christian army here to protect them. And they lower the defense and they come out and to greet them. And that's when the Mongol horde comes in for there.
Oh my goodness. So they pretend to be the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He's like, oh, we need wooden tees. I need 10,000 wooden tees now.
Well, I guess that's what they get for falling for it. Just because people walk around with a cross don't make them good people.
Right.
Or even on your side.
So they got number one. I'm in Quora. I don't even know what that is. I don't know if I'm in QAnon or not. Cyrus the Great.
Cyrus of Persia, uh-huh.
Genghis Khan, number two.
Mm.
Number three, Alexander the Great.
Okay.
Number four, Ashoka. And number five, the little French guy that could.
Napoleon in there, huh? Awesome.
He dominated a big chunk of Europe there.
Yeah. Nice size there.
But Subotai, man. How do you spell this dude's name?
Subotai? Oh, Subutai.
Oh, dang. He had a scar on his face? Or is this just a drawing they put in the cartoon?
We don't know yet. There's still a lot of different versions of him out there.
Dude, the pictures. Yo.
He looks like...
Yo.
Yeah.
Dude, they can make a Marvel movie just based on this dude.
Yeah, he is. Like I said, he just has that look. I mean, you think Dog of War and you see his face, like, it's hard to think of anyone else after that.
That's hands down one of the best nicknames out there.
Mm-hmm.
Dog of War. I'm gonna be blind in my own house.
The opposite of the Dog of War over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm the kitten.
Kitten of conflict.
So what's next for Subotai? What's his legacy?
He goes back home, help out the new cons. He kind of builds up the guard because his time, he knows his time is going pretty, it's starting to wear down, but he's going to help the son, Ogadai, get some more of China before he dies. And he is, you know, he definitely goes into some of the harder battles against China, but he is one of those guys who is able to really take out most of the Song dynasty so that by the time Kublai takes over, the third Khan, he really only has that southern part of China. And while that is a great feat in its own, a lot of that footwork was done by Subotai. And that's really it for the, you know, for the wolf himself. He basically, I mean, he fights really until his dying days.
So he does he retire or he dies on the field?
No, he retires.
He retires. Okay.
Yeah. He, just... he retires around, I want to say he's in his 70s.
I'm thinking, just getting I'm thinking back then, you know what I mean? It's like, God, oh, I'm the new Khan. You're done. You know,
it wasn't even that. It was just like he was 71 years old. He was done. And then he's going to die 2 years later, retired on his land.
Yeah, but I'm just surprised that they gave him a retirement package is what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, typically, you're like, yo, you're out of here. Out. You can't be around. You know what I mean?
Right. He had such a reverence that you knew Subotai was loyal because Subotai had that reputation. And you also knew that Subotai was super popular. Like to let him go or to force his retirement or to try and hold him if he tried to retire or anything like that would have split up your empire with how much popularity Subotai was. I mean, he was seen as, you know, he's seen as one of Genghis Khan's horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah, shit. And I guess with his kindness and stuff like that, made people be more loyal.
It was Genghis Khan's kindness, really, that was loyal. Definitely wasn't Subotai's kindness. Subotai was all about starving people out and destroying them. You know, Genghis Khan, and probably this is why Genghis Khan, of course, still better known, is Genghis Khan's job was to pull the dog's leash once the city had been conquered.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because he was like Jet Li in Unleashed. You know, you take that collar off.
Yeah, he Genghis Khan was Bob Hopkins.
Yeah. So, yeah, Napoleon, and if you look at a lot of military strategies in World War II and World War I, they're all really based off of a lot of the strategies that Subotai had created so long ago with his Mongol horsemen.
They bit off his style.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can't look at anybody's... anybody who does a feigned retreat, anybody who does that bombardment at the beginning and then comes in or anything like that, they're all just, yeah, they're all copying what this son of the blacksmith did so many years ago.
And he picked up the tactics, you said, not only from Genghis Khan, but or were you saying that he was applying the art of war before even the art of war was...
No, the Art of War was written way before Genghis Khan and them. It was written in 500 BCE.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it is a Bible for military.
Yeah, no, I have it.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I read it and be like, oh, there's a lot of redundant stuff here or repetitive stuff, just different words.
Right.
And there's some stuff, other stuff that contradicts what you just said on the other one. So what's going on here?
It's if you can, yeah, and if you can understand it or understand what he's talking about, because he's, you know, Sun Tzu, like, I think he switches topics so often about what, you know, in his examples.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're looking at some guy, and oh, I forgot about the smoke screens. He's also the master of the smoke screens. That's another thing that Subotai did. He got the gunpowder and didn't use it for anything else, you know, bombs or anything yet, or cannon. That wasn't really the technology at the time, but. He really would use smoke screens to cover the amount of troops that were coming and to cover his troops.
Like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a mask?
A cowl?
Yeah, you gotta put a mask on that scar. Nothing scarier.
Was he a Playboy millionaire?
You know, I'm pretty sure he was basically all those Mulan Huns, those Mongol Mulan. It's just all Subotai.
Where's Rachel? who's Rachel?
We
don't even name anybody named Rachel. Where is she?
I always like the drawings of Mongol generals, especially Subotai, to make him like even more evil and sinister. The ones where he's got like a falcon on his arm as well.
He also has an evil bird that'll peck your eyes out.
Did he have a falcon? Imagine riding a horse and you're carrying a falcon. The falcon's in the horse ride, too.
It's on the head of the horse.
Yeah, just like the a Cadillac emblem, mm-hmm. like an ornament.
That'd be pretty cool.
So yeah, it's just so that was that's the story of Subotai. Nothing too out of the ordinary as far as conquerors go, but definitely an innovator. Definitely someone who gets forgotten a lot. Ferocious in his own right, but when you compare it to all the stories of Genghis Khan, that's kind of par for the course of what he does. I don't think you're going to surprise anyone when you say he's a Mongol general and, oh, look what he did. Like, we kind of expect that. Mm. But really smart. And yeah, I would say he is, and a lot of military historians have different ideas and stuff, but he really is one of the pioneers of modern warfare. And there we go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed a little bit of giving support for the unnamed, for the underdog here, the unsung story.
Remember the name.
Of a sports analogy, I couldn't even think of a sports analogy on that one.
Tom Brady.
Is he the Brady to his Belichick?
Yeah, because everybody's like, oh, Belichick is the one.
Right.
Belichick is the brains on it. And then Brady leaves New England, wins in Tampa, and people are like, oh, maybe it was Tom Brady after all.
So, yeah, there we go. Suotai, the Tom Brady of military arms.
Also full of deception.
Full of deception, right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Master Deception.
Right. He had the video cameras out there. Yeah. Oh, the balls deflated.
Whatever it takes to win, man. I'm all for that.
So make sure you check us out. What is this, 67th episode you said?
67, yes.
67. Yeah. Right. Oh, we're going to hit that 100 soon. Maybe we'll actually see each other by then.
2023.
We're going to get
strap it on.
PFT still going strong. Please check out all of our shows. There are so many that are going strong. At least off the top of my head, at least 7 that are still like constantly producing content. And I know there's probably more if you go on.
Absolutely.
The
website. Absolutely. There's 6 or 7 going weekly, and then others that are in between seasons or pre-production or whatever. We have new shows getting ready to debut. We got a lot of stuff going on. Cool. Keeping busy.
So, all right, everybody. We hope you've had a good time. For Pedro, Chris, and I, this is Half True History, and we'll see you on the next page.
Peace. Hopefully you have a kitchen next time we record.
A PFT Media production.